Penny. We'll keep investigating, you can be assured of that. Detective Boone opened the back door of the cruiser while Officer Kit went around the front, climbed in the driver's seat, and started the big engine. Travel safe. Please give my best regards to your aunt. Will do. Thanks. Judy eased into the cruiser, and Detective Boone shut the door behind her, closing her inside. The cruiser took off, taking a left turn to bypass the media, then wound its way through Kennett Square and hit the highway. Judy rested her head back on the hard plastic seat, closing her eyes, but she didn't rest. Awful images flooded her brain of white-hot explosions and fresh red blood. She could hear the noise of the blast, Roberto moaning and Carlos cursing. She flashed on Father Vega, feeling shocked all over again that he tried to stab her to death. The priest had hidden behind the cloth to win the trust of Iris, Daniela, and an entire congregation. But in the end, Father Vega had betrayed them all, even his own, Father Keegan. Judy thought about Iris, who had been so savagely murdered, and it made her angry and frustrated that she still didn't know why. Judy had believed she wanted justice, but what she really wanted was to understand why. Though no explanation of motive could make her truly comprehend the human capacity for evil. She opened her eyes, gazed out the window, and watched the highway whiz past. Twilight fell, painting the sky black as they headed toward the city, and she wondered what she was going back to since everything had changed. Her mother, her aunt, even Frank was gone. She didn't have a car anymore. She didn't even have a purse or a phone. She thought about stopping at a payphone to call her mother and the office, but the police already had. The Rule 37 motion had been answered, and the rest of her cases could wait. It was impossible to think about work in the aftermath of so much destruction and death. Ms. Carrier, we're approaching the city limits, Officer Kit said, looking into the rearview mirror. Where would you like to go? Pennsylvania Hospital, please. Gotcha. Officer Kit hit the gas, rolling into the city, then entered the grid that was Center City, choked with rush hour traffic. Finally, they ended up in front of the hospital, where he dropped her off and she thanked him. Judy entered the hospital and crossed to the reception desk to get the information about Aunt Barb's room, then went up the elevator. She got off on a floor busy with visitors, doctors, and nurses bustling back and forth. Dinner service had begun, and an orderly pushed a tall, rolling stack of food trays covered with steamy lids, though she couldn't smell anything for the stink of manure and ashes in her nose. She walked down the glistening hall, reading the room numbers until she had located her aunt's room, which was the first closed door. She paused for a moment, bracing herself to see her aunt and her mother, and vice versa, or whatever. She knocked on the door, then opened it to see Aunt Barb in bed, and her mother sitting by her side, with a female visitor. "Hi, everybody," she said, entering the room uncertainly. "Judy!" Aunt Barb looked up, her lips parting with happiness. Flowers and cards covered the side table. "You're here. Are you okay?" "The police called, and we've been watching on TV. Were you hurt in the explosion? What happened?" "Thank God you're okay." "Honey," her mother jumped up and rushed toward her, arms outstretched, and gathered her up for a real hug. "We were worried sick. Are you okay? What did they do to you?" "I'm fine. I'm okay." Judy hugged her mother back, surprised at the show of emotion, which felt somehow painful. She let her mother go, avoiding her eyes. "It's all right now, so don't worry." "But look at your face," her mother said aghast. "There's little cuts on your cheeks. Is that from the car bomb? Did you get to a hospital? Didn't they take you to an ER? I knew something was wrong, very wrong, when you didn't call me back. I called you this morning. Did you get my message? This morning? Judy realized that her mother must have been the one who'd phoned when she'd been hiding from Carlos in the manure bin. She decided not to share that part of the story. Sorry, I didn't hear the phone. Judy, come over, please. Aunt Barb was sitting up in bed and motioning to her with a hand attached to an IV and a pressure monitor. I want to see you, you poor thing. What have you been through? I'm fine, really. Judy walked over stiffly, unable to shake the awkwardness she felt in the presence of her mother and aunt, especially in front of the female visitor, whom she assumed was a friend of Aunt Barb's. Judy extended a hand. Hi, nice to see you, I'm Judy. Nice to see you too, answered the woman with a Spanish accent. I'm Daniela Gamboa. Chapter 43. You're Daniela? Iris's friend? Judy asked, incredulous, and Daniela clasped Judy's hand, covering it with her other hand, and held it for a moment. She looked younger than Iris, in her late 40s, and was tall, about 5'7" and slim. Her large brown eyes stood out in a long face, and her shiny black hair was pulled back in a long ponytail. She had on a jeans jacket over a white sweater with baggy jeans and black sneakers. I'm very sorry about what happened to you, from Carlos. They say on TV that your car, it blew up. He's very crazy, man, very crazy. And Father Vega, they say on TV he was with them. I can't believe that. Daniela's dark eyes flared in disbelief. I know him. He know my family. We are from same town. I tell him everything is all my fault. I understand, Judy said, though she didn't, not yet. Daniela, I'm just happy you're alive. I was worried about you. So are the police. Where have you been? I'm sorry. So sorry. Daniela shook her head. I feel so terrible. So sick in my heart. In my soul. I was hiding. I get on the bus and go out of town to Wilmington. Why were you hiding? From Carlos? Yes, from him. From Father Vega. From everybody. Daniela nodded, agitated. That's why I take the money, to get away from Carlos. What money? Aunt Barb motioned for attention. Daniela saw on the TV news that Father Vega had been arrested and Carlos and Roberto killed. So she came out of hiding. Iris had told her about me, so she knew where to find me. Aunt Barb's eyes filmed with new tears, and she held the Kleenex to her nose. Daniela, tell Judy what you told us. I don't want to tell it. I can't. Judy, Carlos and Roberto, they kill Iris. They murder her. I know, Judy said, sinking onto the bed. You know? Aunt Barb asked, shocked. How did you find out? Did they try to kill you? What happened? Judy's mother interjected. Judy, how do you know? How did you get so involved in this? Why didn't the police handle it? What's going on? Ladies, please. Judy waved them both into silence, focusing on Daniela. Why did they kill Iris? Do you know? Yes. Daniela pursed her lips, which were thin. Please, tell me. Judy eased down onto a corner of the bed, across from Daniela. Iris and me, we meet Carlos when he and Roberto come to Mike's. His new friend and his friend Roberto. I like Carlos, and he's liking me, so we date, you know? Yes, Judy answered, trying to be patient. Carlos drink all the time, too much, and he is mean, ugly. I know he still sells heroin. I want to get away from him, but I cannot. He hit me all the time. He say I am sleeping with everybody, the men, the bosses, everybody. He don't want me to work at my job no more. He say he will marry me, give me money. He say he has so much money. He tell me where his money is.
Where was it?
At Mike's, in the shed. He tell me there is a door in the floor.
Judy realized it must have been a second stash.
I don't understand something. Why did he tell you that?
When he drink, he tell me. He's out of his mind. He gets so angry, he yell at himself, at me, and God.
Daniela shook her head with a deep frown.
Crazy he get.
So then what happened?
So, then we have a big fight, and he hit me here.
Daniela pointed to her lower chest.
He break my rib. He say he will kill me. I know I have to get away. I tell Iris we should get his money. We can take the money and I can go away. Get away from him. I have to do it.
Judy could visualize the two desperate women, best friends trying to help each other.
But I tell Father Vega, my priest. My priest! He helped me all the time with Carlos. He tell me to pray, but he lie.
Daniela shook her head, agonized.
I don't know. Father Vega is with Carlos. I don't know.
I'm sure. Judy's heart went out to her.
Carlos drink one night, and he fall asleep from a pill I put in his rum. Iris bring me the sleeping pill from Barb's house.
Daniela winced, gesturing at Aunt Barb, who listened, dabbing her eyes.
And then we go in her car to the shed at Mike's. We find the money and we take some. Iris hide the money at Barb's house.
Okay.
So, Friday, they move my shift at work. The boss call me up. He tell me no afternoon shift with Iris. Somebody on morning shift call in sick. The boss tell me to come in.
What's the boss's name?
Roy. I worry it isn't right. People get sick. Roy don't care. He don't change shift. He don't bother. I don't tell Iris. I know she worried too much.
Daniela paused with a pained sigh.
I go early. I hear Roy and Carlos talk. They say, Father Vega, tell them everything I tell him. They know we take the money. I run away. I don't have no money. I don't need no money.
Daniela made a hitchhiking motion with her thumb, and then her face fell. The lines in her forehead formed fissures of deep grief.
I call Iris. I tell her. I leave a message to call me.
You called her Saturday? Was it around 2?
Yes.
Judy realized that Daniela had been the one who'd called Iris in the rose garden.
I don't know what happened. I hear she die, and I know they kill her. I feel terrible, so terrible about Iris. I pray and pray for God to forgive me. I don't forgive me. I don't know how they kill her, but they do.
You're right. They did.
How? How do you know?
Before we discuss that, let me ask you something. Why did you come forward now?
I don't know what to do. I am safe now Carlos is dead, but I no feel safe.
Other bosses know we take the money. They want the money, so I come to Barb to ask her for it.
Daniela's eyes turned pleading, and she faced Aunt Barb in bed.
Please, give me the money so I can give it to them, so they will not kill me or my family at home.
Judy held up a hand, interjecting. Daniela, I don't think it works that way. If you show yourself, they'll kill you. Whoever else is in the conspiracy, they'll kill you. They can't let you live, even if you give them the money back.
What can I do?
Daniela's eyes brimmed with tears.
What can I do? They will kill my family.
Judy's thoughts raced ahead. Let's go to the police. I'll go with you. We can make a deal.
No, 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 never.
Daniela shook her head.
They will kill me. You see how they do. Let me try to get you a deal.
Judy dug in the pocket of her sweatpants and pulled out the array of business cards from the various government agencies.
Look, I just met with all of these cops, FBI, ICE too. Let me make some phone calls and talk to them. I'm a lawyer. I won't tell them where you are. No, I no go to the police.
Daniela shook her head again, frightened.
You can and you should.
You have something to trade for a visa. You know about the other stash. There's probably a lot of things you know.
No, no, no.
What else do you know about the cartel? Did Carlos ever talk to you about the cartel or his business when he was drunk?
Yes, okay, he did. He bragged all the time. He want to be the boss, the top.
Did he say who he's in business with?
Yes, I know, he tell me.
Are some of the mushroom growers in on it, Mike's? And the treatment plant?
Yes, yes.
What about the police in East Grove?
Yes.
Great, Judy said, then realized how wrong that sounded. The point is, the government will trade for that information. They want names. That's how they make their case.
No, they kill me. They kill my family. The cartel, they do what they want.
What if I could make a deal to protect your family, Daniela?
They will find them. They will kill them.
Let me call. Let me see if I can get a deal to protect them. I won't tell the government where you are until they agree. Judy spoke from the heart.
Daniela, won't you take a chance for Iris?
Chapter 44. It was after midnight when Judy finally left the federal building in downtown Philly, turning left and walking down a chilly Chestnut Street. It had rained again, leaving the asphalt a shiny black and the sidewalk slick. Gutters flowed with rainwater, cigarette butts, and other debris. There was almost no traffic, except a white SEPTA bus that rambled by, empty, going her way. But Judy didn't try to catch it. She wanted to walk home, to clear her mind. She shoved her hands in her pockets, heading home, head down. She and Daniela had met with the top brass at the FBI, DEA, and ICE, and Daniela had given the government plenty of good information. They had succeeded, with the help of an immigration lawyer, in securing an S visa for Daniela, which was a special visa given to confidential informants, the so-called snitch visa. They also got a deal to protect Daniela's mother and older sister, still living in Mexico, and the three of them were already on their way to their respective safe houses. Judy passed the Constitution Center on her left and the Liberty Bell on her right, sights that usually gave her a lift, but not tonight. She supposed at some level she had gotten justice for Iris, with the killers now dead and the government on its way to making a case against the rest of the conspirators. She had even learned the reason they had killed Iris, but she felt an emptiness inside that she hadn't anticipated. She walked down the dark street and crossed into Old City, where all the stores were closed and the shops dark. She thought of the horror she had witnessed, the loss of poor Domingo, and she felt a wave of sadness sweep over her. Somehow, listening to the litany of names that Daniela had given the authorities made her feel even worse, and she wondered if justice was possible in a world full of profoundly evil and damaged human beings, in a veritable universe of damage. Judy found herself in her apartment without even realizing it, having let herself in from the key in the lockbox that the landlord required them to keep there for the fire department. She flicked on the light, closed the door behind her, and set the key on the side table with a little clink. She didn't bother to check her mail. She looked around for her mother, or her aunt, or whatever, but nobody was downstairs. Her mother had probably gone upstairs to sleep. Of course, Frank wasn't home, and Judy tried not to focus on how empty the apartment seemed without him. Penny bounded over, then plopped her butt on the hardwood and started scratching her ear with her back leg, signaling that the fleas were back. "Hey, girl," Judy said to the dog, petting her. "Can you wait on that walk? I need a shower." Penny trotted behind as Judy climbed the stairs quietly so as not to wake up her mother. But when she got to the second floor, she looked down the hall and noticed the bedroom door was open. Her mother slept with the door closed. So Judy tiptoed to the bedroom, peeked inside the room, and could tell in the streetlight from the windows that the bed was empty. She flicked on the overhead light, and her mother wasn't there. Judy reached for her pocket to get her cell phone, then remembered her cell phone was gone. She still had a landline on the nightstand next to her bed, so she went over, picked up the receiver, and heard the telltale signal that she had messages. She barely remembered how to retrieve them, but she hit the right numbers, then deleted a series of junk calls until she got a message from her mother. "Honey?" her mother said, her tone uncharacteristically tentative. "I'm going to be staying at the hospital tonight. They said I'm allowed, and Barb and I both thought you might like to see Frank after the hell you've been through. We feel just terrible about displacing him, and when Barb gets discharged tomorrow, she wants to go home to recuperate instead of the apartment. We both love you very much. I hope things went well with Daniela, and I'll keep my cell phone on if you want to talk. Good night." Judy hung up the phone, shaking her head. She turned away from the bed and started to leave. Then she did a double take, realizing what she had just seen. She backed up to her closet and looked at it again, but she had been right the first time. The closet door had been rolled back to expose Frank's side of the closet, but his clothes were gone, including the hangers, leaving an empty hole. The sweaters, sweatshirts, and t-shirts that he used to jam into the shelves above his clothes were gone too. She looked down, and she could see the floorboards on his side of the closet, which had been covered for as long as she could remember by his pungent jumble of sneakers, loafers, and slide flip-flops. Frank must have come to the apartment today and moved out. It was over. Judy blinked, surprised, though she shouldn't have been. Frank wasn't the kind of man to drag things out, and she knew she had hurt him. Her mouth went dry. Something about his being gone seemed inconceivable, though she had willed it to happen. She found herself shaking her head. She crossed to the dresser and pulled out his drawer, which started with the fourth, but it was empty. She closed it and went to the fifth drawer, opening it even though she knew what she'd find, like a psycho ex on autopilot. She left the drawer hanging open, straightened up, and looked around, seeing a bedroom she barely recognized now that she started noticing things. Frank's framed photos and favorite Oakley sunglasses were missing from the top of the dresser, and his series of black kettlebells in graduated weights were no longer lined up against the wall where she used to trip over them. In place of the Frank things were her mother's things: a pump bottle of Cetaphil hand lotion, a small green jar of La Mer eye cream, and an old-school folding travel clock by the bed, and her Aunt Barb's things: the compression bras she'd bought at the mastectomy boutique, a large-size Ziploc bag of medication in brown plastic bottles, and a stack of mystery novels. Judy scanned the room, which struck her as a total mess, strewn with debris, damage of its own kind. She couldn't help but see it as a mirror of her life, in matching disarray with Frank gone and her mother and aunt jumbled together, the lines between the two women blurred, their respective roles impossible to delineate, much less define. Mother and aunt. Aunt and mother. Both women seemed to be occupying the same place at the same time, which everyone knew was impossible, most especially Mother Nature. Judy turned away, left the bedroom, and walked stiffly to the bathroom with the dog at her heels. She flipped on the light switch and avoided looking in the mirror because she didn't want to play match the facial feature again. She reached inside the shower and turned on the faucet, trying not to think another thought or feel another emotion. She undressed while she waited for the water to warm up, shedding her borrowed sweat clothes, which Penny came over to sniff avidly. Judy stepped naked into the shower, letting the warm water run over her cuts and bruises, feeling it wash away the manure and the ashes, cleansing her of the blood and the grime. And she didn't know when she started crying, but she was pretty sure she would never, ever stop. Chapter 45. Next morning, Judy emerged from her front door, reflexively raising her hand against the press, stationed outside the row house that held her apartment. Photographers aimed cameras with wide rubber lenses at Judy's face, and TV reporters rushed forward, extending their black bubble microphones. She'd known they were there, having seen them from her window, so she plowed through them with her head down, ignoring their shouted questions. "Miss Carrier, was the car bomb intended for you? Why were you in Chester County? Did you know Carlos Ramiro and Roberto Rivera? How are you involved? Who are you representing? Is it true that Father Oscar Vega assaulted you?" "No comment," Judy called, hustling down the street, looking for a cab. Traffic clogged both lanes, and passersby stared at the scene, stopping on their way to work. It was a sunny day, and she knew she'd look like a freak in this light, with foundation hardly covering the tiny cuts on her face and lip gloss doing nothing to her split lip but making it look slicker. She dressed in a boring navy sweater and pants, with a trench coat on top, in case she had to go back to the FBI offices. Her trench coat flew behind her as she broke into a light run, but the reporters ran after her. "Come on, Judy! Don't you have a comment for us, Judy? Are you or Benny Rosado stepping in for the defense of anyone? Do you know who the targets of the federal investigation will be? Can you comment on the murder of Domingo Gutierrez?" Judy cringed at the sound of Domingo's name. She thought of him all last night, hardly sleeping, and replaying their meeting over and over in her mind. She spotted a cab and flagged it down, with reporters at her heels. "Miss Carrier, did you know the men who died at the treatment facility, Carlos Ramiro and Roberto Rivera? Were they conspirators with Domingo Gutierrez? How did you get involved? Are there any persons of interest? Any indictments coming down the pipeline?" Judy ran to meet the cab as it pulled over to the curb, and when it stopped, she jumped inside and turned away from the reporters as camera flashes fired at her inside the back seat. "You somebody important?" the cabbie called over his shoulder as the cab took off. He was young, an African-American, in a mesh Sixers cap. "Not in the least," Judy answered, then told him where she needed to go. Chapter 46. "Hi, Mom. Aunt Barb." Judy entered the hospital room, trying to suppress the tension she felt inside. "Good morning, dear," her mother said, looking over with a nervous smile. She'd been packing items from the bed table in a white plastic bag, but she walked over, bag in hand, and gave Judy a quick peck on the cheek. She was freshly made up, back in her favorite long gray sweater, black knit leggings, and black ballet shoes. But her manner was stilted. "Did it go okay? At the FBI?" "All fine, as expected. That's why I didn't call, sorry."
Sure. We understand.
And Daniela?
She's fine and in their hands?
Wonderful.
Her mother smiled, almost politely.
Did you sleep well?
I did, thanks.
Are you feeling better?
Yes, thanks.
You sure you don't need to be seen by a doctor? We're in a hospital, after all.
No, I'm fine.
I bet Frank was glad to see you.
Yes, Judy answered, avoiding her mother's eye.
She wasn't about to tell them about Frank. She had known both women her whole life, but felt as if she couldn't trust them anymore.
You're all over the news.
Her mother nodded in the direction of the television, which was playing morning shows on mute.
I know, right?
Judy found herself hesitating before she went over to Aunt Barb, who was sitting inclined in bed, pale and tired under a multicolored cap and buried by a white blanket, her finger hooked up to the monitor and her hand to an IV. Judy leaned over and gave her aunt a quick kiss on the cheek, feeling as if she were going through the motions. All of them were.
Hi, honey.
Aunt Barb managed a shaky smile.
Who knew what a mess I'd get you into, huh?
We're so proud of you for everything you did and for helping Daniela.
Thanks.
How do you feel? Judy lingered by the bed, glancing at the array of monitors with their blinking lights. The cottony straps of Aunt Barb's vest with the drain pockets were visible because her neckline had slipped to the side.
Not too bad. It feels like there's pressure on my chest, but it's not that bad.
They're weaning me off of the morphine and onto Demerol.
Aunt Barb gestured at the IV drip that ran to a port in the top of her hand.
It supposedly makes your back itch, so I have my back scratcher.
See, look. She patted a bamboo back scratcher by her side. So everything went okay?
Perfect. Aunt Barb smiled.
I'm relieved to have it behind me.
The doctor said I might not have to have radiation, but we'll see.
I'm so happy for you,
Judy said, meaning it. But she didn't feel happiness, strangely apart from her own emotions. Before, she and her aunt would have been giggling, laughing, and high-fiving. But that was before, and this was after.
So, you ready to go home today?
More than ready.
When do you think you'll be discharged?
Judy asked, making small talk, filling the air with words to dispel the awkwardness.
They said the doctor should be here in about an hour. Then I have to fill out forms and such.
Noon, I hope to be out.
You sure you want to go back to your house?
Yes. Thanks for the offer of your place. But I'll be more comfy at home, now that it's safe thanks to you.
Judy's mother returned to the bed table and slipped a brown jug of sunsweet prune juice in a bag. We have everything planned. We'll take my car to your apartment, pack her bags, then get her home.
Will you join us or do you have to work?
No, I have to work, Judy lied. She didn't know what she was going to do today, and nobody at the office would blame her for taking the day off.
But you'll come out to the house tonight.
Say hi, have dinner.
If I can, we'll see.
Good. I'll make a nice salmon with parsley. You know how you love that dish?
Frank can come too.
Her mother wrapped the top of the plastic bag around the bottom, making a neat roll. Aunt Barb will rest for the afternoon. Then she has to do her range of motion and breathing exercises.
Breathing? Judy faked a smile. In, out, in, out?
With that gadget, a spirometer. Her mother pointed at a transparent plastic tube by the side of the bed, with graduated numbers up the side and a blue plastic bottom. You inhale and try to get the ball in the air. She has to do it every day, twice a day.
Aunt Barb patted the bed.
Judy, come sit down and tell us how last night went with the FBI. I'm so curious about how it works, negotiating deals and such.
It's very bureaucratic, Judy said, suddenly sick of the small talk, of avoiding the subject. She wished she had gone straight to work.
I doubt that, Aunt Barb said gently. Is it like on TV?
Barb, of course it isn't. Her mother came over, setting down the bag.
I bet it is bureaucratic. All those government agencies are the same. Everything is political, right, Judy?
I don't want to talk about that, Judy said, the words slipping out of their own accord.
I want to understand what happened with me and you two.
Here? Her mother's eyes flared. Now?
Yes. Here and now.
Why not here and now? Judy thought better of it when she spotted a pained look crease Aunt Barb's face.
I mean, forget it. You're right. This isn't the time or place after the operation and all. That was selfish of me. I wasn't thinking.
No, it's fine, Aunt Barb said firmly. It is. We can talk about it right now.
Please, forget it. Judy felt her face heat with shame. You've just had a major operation. It's just that it's so fake to be together without talking about it, but we can't not be together, so we have to be fake. I'm
sorry that was wrong. She stammered, feeling her emotions rise to the surface, the anger and the love both at once.
It was so selfish.
No, it's not. Please, Judy, sit down.
No, forget it. It's not fair to you right now.
Yes, I want to talk. Really talk.
Aunt Barb patted the bed again for Judy to sit down.
I don't like pussyfooting around it either. That's not how we are or have ever been.
There's an elephant in the room, as they say, and we need to deal with it.
Sit.
Please.
I had a mastectomy, but my mouth works fine, believe me.
Okay, then.
Her mother came over, sinking into a heavy chair.
We'll talk.
Judy perched on the corner of the bed, distant from them both, shifting her attention from one woman to the other, the sisters' resemblance clear in the hue of their deep blue eyes set far apart. Paradoxically, the difference between them could also be found in their eyes. But in the aspect to them, her mother's eyes were more guarded, her lids closed like a shield against some sudden brightness, while Aunt Barb's anguish showed clearly through her frank blue lenses.
Honey, Aunt Barb said softly, how can we help you understand this? I'll do anything and I'll tell you anything.
Tell me what happened from your point of view, because Mom already told me, I mean, my aunt.
Judy swallowed hard, a bitter knot twisting in her chest.
I don't even know what to call you. Aunt, Mom, Aunt Mom?
Aunt Barb cringed.
I know it's hard to process. I want to know what you were thinking.
Judy modulated her voice, trying to stay calm.
Not just in the beginning, but all these years, keeping it from me. I mean, I trusted you. You lied to me every time you saw me.
Aunt Barb nodded, pained.
You feel betrayed?
Absolutely. Of course I do. How could I not?
Judy looked from Aunt Barb to her mother.
Years of Mother's Days. I'm giving cards and presents to someone not my mother. You did betray me, both of you. You've lied to me as long as I've been alive. I don't know who you are, and it makes me feel like I don't know who I am. I've always defined myself in relation to you. At least in the family, I thought I was Aunt Barb's niece and Delia's daughter, but it turns out it's the other way around.
We screwed this up royally, Aunt Barb said gently. But believe me, we didn't mean to.
We tried to do the right thing, Judy's mother added, pursing her lips.
Well, you didn't, Judy shot back, trying to suppress her resentment. The truth is the right thing. You could have told me the truth sooner. Even if they made you lie when I was born, you could have told me the truth when I grew up, but you didn't. You avoided it. You put it off. You pretended. It was cowardly.
I'm so sorry, Aunt Barb said, holding tears back. I'm very sorry. I truly am. I regret that I didn't tell you sooner. I should have.
It wasn't until my diagnosis that I realized the cliche really was true, that life is short. I should have understood it after Steve died, but I was so preoccupied with his illness I didn't think of myself. Somehow I thought I would never get sick. I was in denial. What are the odds? Both of us getting cancer so close together. Aunt Barb ran a dry tongue over her lips. But when I got diagnosed, I thought about putting my affairs in order. So if the worst happened, I didn't want to leave this earth without you hearing from me why everything happened the way it did.
So tell me then. It's true. Our parents did make us do it. I don't blame them either, because they were only doing what they thought was right, too. I try not to judge them. I'm in no position to judge anybody.
Judy listened, trying to adjust mentally to the fact that she knew this woman who was talking and didn't know her, both at the same time.
We made this decision, and we carried it out.
And your mother stepped in to help. And she's not my mother. You're my mother. Can we please be honest from here on out?
Okay. Then let me say what I was going to say. Something that even your mother can't say, which is that when you were born and our parents gave us this ultimatum, she was amazing.
Aunt Barb gestured at Judy's mother with an IV port attached.
She responded with grace and generosity. She was thrilled to take you and raise you. She gave me a gift, but above all, she gave you a gift.
Judy blinked, letting it sink in, because it rang true.
Think about the position your mother was in. She had a young child at home, but she fell in love with this baby girl, an infant. She took you in with open arms. She knew the entire time that someday we would tell you the truth and that you would react this way.
Aunt Barb paused.
But I'm not talking about you yet. I'm talking about her.
She had a sword of Damocles hanging over her head every day of her life, not knowing when this day would come, but knowing inevitably that it would.
Can you imagine being in that position?
Judy let it sink in. She had never seen her mother that way, because she couldn't have, but she understood now.
Imagine opening your heart to let in a child that you know will be angry at you for the decision you made, when you did it with the best of intentions to give that child a home. And can you understand her not wanting that day to come, for putting off telling you as long as she could?
Judy swallowed hard. She glanced at her mother, who kept her head down, rubbing her linked fingers together in her lap.
Still think she was a coward?
I don't.
I think she was a human being. I think she was a woman with a heart.
Aunt Barb shook her head sadly.
So let's give your mother some credit. 'Cause she was your mother. She did raise you. And she didn't tell you the truth because she wanted things to stay the way they were. She's terrified to lose you.
Mom, you won't lose me, Judy blurted out, though her mother didn't look up.
You could never lose me, either of you. I just feel angry. Of course you do, Aunt Barb said quickly. We have lived this way for this long. And you can call it a lie or a betrayal, and I suppose you're right about that, but to me, what we call each other isn't the thing that matters. Even that I'm your birth mother, and your mother is the one who raised you, that doesn't matter either. How can you say that?
Judy asked, bewildered.
What matters then?
Judy, to me, those things are just on the surface. We're no different from a woman or a girl who puts up a child for adoption and is lucky enough to find that child welcomed with loving arms by another woman. Both women are mothers.
Aunt Barb's eyes flashed with new animation, and her tone strengthened.
The only difference here is that I was lucky enough to stay in your life. And if you think back, I've been in your life for all of your life.
Judy thought back to the events of her life, to college graduation and law school. Aunt Barb had organized the luncheons afterwards with her mother. Judy remembered when she was a child, to brownies, then to Girl Scouts. Aunt Barb had sold cookies in front of the supermarkets with Judy. Aunt Barb had been the den mother, not her mother, and she had even chaperoned the field trips. Aunt Barb had woven herself into Judy's life, the two of them there for her, for as far back as Judy could remember.
We shared you, in a way, you know?
We sat down with your schedule for your various activities, your choir recitals and such, and even for your soccer games, home and away. Whatever you were doing, we did as many as we could together.
Aunt Barb met her gaze directly.
There were times, too, when we actually took turns. Your mom was kind enough to step aside for some things, to let me have you all to myself.
Like what?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Like the aquarium?
Judy asked, the memory coming out of the blue.
She remembered that the aquarium trip had always been a sore spot with her, because her mother had simply said she was too busy to go, so Aunt Barb had gone instead.
Did you guys agree that you should be the chaperone, not Mom? What grade was that in, remind me?
Aunt Barb frowned in confusion. It's my chemo brain again.
Or maybe that's an excuse. I remember the trip, but I don't remember the grade.
Fifth, Judy answered, beginning to feel a new sympathy for her mother, whom she blamed whenever she wasn't there, sending Aunt Barb in her place.
Yes, I remember now. She went to the zoo trip because I took you to the aquarium. You loved the puffins. You wouldn't stop watching them.
Yes. Her mother looked up with a sad smile. You came home with the toy puffin. It's still in your room.
Yes, you named him Mort.
Right. The sadness left her mother's smile. What a name.
Besides,
I think he's a girl.
Aunt Barb chimed in with a chuckle. Judy felt the knot in her chest loosen, relieved that all this time, her awkwardness with her mother wasn't her fault, and that nothing she could have done would have made it better. Somehow the lifting of the secret relieved the burden of guilt she'd felt every minute until now. Aunt Barb continued,
Judy, we both love you like a mother. We have both spent our lives mothering you. I completely understand that you think of my sister as your mother, and I would never dream of asking you to change that. Nor do I even want you to.
Aunt Barb shook her head, her lips pursed with conviction.
Keep calling her your mother. She deserves that. She has earned that in spades.
And please keep calling me Aunt Barb. I'm used to it. I don't want that to change. It's only superficial. It's form over substance. It's not what I want.
What do you want, then?
Judy's emotions welled up. She realized that Aunt Barb really was the unselfish person she'd always believed her to be.
I want us to be honest and close and take our new relationship as it comes, bit by bit. That's how I took the chemo. That's how I'm taking this mastectomy. And that's how I'll take the radiation if I have to.
Judy felt her resentment melt away, and Aunt Barb continued talking.
We will go forward, getting our test results over time, changing our treatments and protocols, our dosages and our meds, revisiting our prognosis. You have to take it as it comes. That's what I've learned. Not from cancer, but from life. Aunt Barb faced Judy's mother with a crooked smile. We'll muddle through, the three of us. We'll fuss and bicker, but we'll be fine. Won't we, Delia?
We sure will, her mother answered warmly, reaching over and patting Aunt Barb's arm.
Judy watched them both, thinking back to last week when she'd been sitting at the bridal salon, wishing that she were closer to her mother. In the end, it turned out that she really was close to her mother. She just hadn't known who her mother was until now. It wasn't quite the ending she expected, but it was a happy one. Her spirits lifted, and her heart filled with love. She had a feeling that from now on, things were going to be different, even better, with both her mothers. And the truth.
Chapter 47.
Judy stepped off the elevator at work, and Mary, Allegra, and Marshall looked over from the reception desk, then burst into excited grins.
Judy, thank God! Mary shouted, rushing over with open arms, followed by Marshall and Allegra.
Judy!
Allegra squealed as the three of them swarmed Judy, scooping her up with girl hugs and happy noises.
You guys are too much!
Judy joined them in laughter, disentangling herself from their joyful embrace, fragrant with fresh perfume and overpriced hair products. Mary beamed.
You're amazing. Are you okay? I called your cell phone a million times.
Allegra's eyes flared wide behind her glasses.
Who blew up your car? That's so scary. It's like a movie.
It's a long story, Judy told them, which was the understatement of the year.
Judy.
Marshall stepped forward with a flurry of phone messages.
Sorry to be a buzzkill, but you have some things to deal with right away. The press has been calling all morning, and I don't know who you want to respond to, if anybody.
None of them.
Judy took the phone messages without looking at them. There had been a slew of reporters in front of the office building, and she had no commented her way past them. Mary touched her arm.
Judy, there's one or two reporters you could talk to. You just made huge news. It wouldn't be the worst idea to promote yourself.
Benny would.
Well, I wouldn't, Judy snorted.
Her only remaining nub of resentment was for Benny, because now it was time to face the damages cases. Where is the boss, by the way?
At her trial. The jury's coming back.
She better win or I'll fire her ass.
Everybody laughed, including Mary. Girl, don't start. When the boss gets back from court, you should kiss and make up. Your stock is up right now, and you need to parlay that sucker. Parlay, I tell you.
I'll get right on that.
Judy looked over, seeing that Marshall had more to say, and it wasn't easy to get a word in edgewise in an all-female law firm.
Marshall, what is it?
There's good news and bad news.
Good news first, Judy said, her mood improving. Her heart felt lighter since the talk with her mother and aunt, and being back at the office with the girls felt like terra firma, solid under her clogs.
You won. In Adler, the judge denied the Rule 37 motion.
Yay!
Judy cheered, and so did Mary and Allegra. Marshall grinned. The judge's order came in your email this morning, and I printed it. It's here, with your mail. She handed Judy a thick packet of correspondence. The judge really nailed Kellen, saying that he wasted the court's time and acted like a basketball player faking that he got fouled.
Wonderful!
Judy thought ahead, anticipating her conversation with Linda Adler. Conversations with clients always went better when they started with victories. And Kellen would think harder about settling the case now that his gambit had backfired.
Here's the bad news. John Foxman called and said you need to call him right away. There's a problem with the money for your aunt. The message is on top.
Thanks, Marshall, Judy said, concerned. She turned toward her office, but her cheering section followed, led by Mary.
So fill me in.
Mary fell into step beside Judy.
How did you get her the deal from the FBI?
Allegra tagged along.
Judy, what happened to your mouth? Did somebody hit you?
I'll fill you guys in later, okay?
Judy's thoughts were elsewhere, wondering what was the matter with the money. Last night at the FBI, she had been so preoccupied with getting a deal for Daniela that she had left that as a loose end.
After I make this phone call, we can yap endlessly.
Okay, honey, Mary said, falling behind. Let me know if you need me. Allegra called after her.
Did you hit him back? Did he have a gun?
Judy hurried into her office, shed her coat and purse on the chair, and sorted through her phone messages. She found John Foxman's number, went around the desk, picked up the phone receiver, and plugged in the number, sitting down.
Foxman here, he answered after one ring.
John, this is Judy.
Judy,
John said, his tone concerned.
I can't believe what I'm reading about you. You're busting drug rings in Chester County now?
I called your cell phone a few times, but there was no answer. I hope you weren't injured.
I'm fine, Judy answered, touched. And thanks for the flowers you sent my aunt. That was so thoughtful.
Are you okay? Was this connected to your aunt's money?
Yes, but is there a problem with the money? Is that why you called?
Not a problem with the money, per se. Believe it or not, my firm is closing, going out of business. They just told us. So I'm calling all my clients. This is my last day.
What?
Judy asked, incredulous.
Eastman and Respondi is closing? That's not possible.
I hear you, but it's happening. It just became public. It's pretty grim around here. Everybody's in shock.
I feel sorry for the staff.
How? Why?
Judy couldn't get over the news.
You have like 300 associates and partners. It's one of the biggest firms in Philadelphia.
So was Wolf Block. Remember them?
What happened? Can you say? Do you know?
Between us, the firm expanded too fast. We opened offices where we didn't need them, and we acquired too much overhead. John tisked. I saw it coming. I've had my resume out for 6 months, but so far, not a nibble.
You're out of a job?
Judy's heart went out to him.
But you're so able. You edited the law review.
Which guarantees nothing in this economy. John chuckled without mirth. If you hear that anybody needs an associate, think of me. I don't only do trusts and estates. I can do any kind of general litigation. I feel weird asking you, but the truth is I need a job. I'll send you a resume and my new contact information if you don't mind.
Not at all. Please send it. Any firm would be lucky to have you.
Thanks. John's tone changed, back to business. Anyway, since the firm is closing, I have to make some changes to the paperwork for your aunt's account immediately. It doesn't alter the account, but because my firm's name is on the papers, we'll have to redo and refile them. Can you come over to sign the new papers sooner rather than later? They're ready whenever you are.
Sure, Judy answered, but she was starting to get an idea. Did you say you do general litigation?
Yes, I was a trial lawyer for 5 years at Thomas, Main, and Henderson.
That's a litigation firm. You must have gone to court a lot.
All the time, for all kinds of civil cases, both defense and plaintiff side. It's really my forte. Eastman needed me in trust in estates, so I played ball. But I'm itching to get back in the courtroom. Judy thought fast. I know of a job you might be interested in. It's not that great, but you'd be in court every day. Fine with me. Where's the job? Judy took a flyer. Here, at Rosado, working for me. John burst into surprised laughter. Are you serious? Absolutely, Judy said, feeling a flush of satisfaction. The more she thought about the idea, the more she liked it, which we all know was something that happened with her. If John took the job, she could avoid trying the damages cases herself, get a superb trial lawyer on board, and keep the legal work for the firm. It didn't hurt that he was super hot, and her very next thought violated federal sexual harassment law. Really? You want me to come work for you? Why not? Judy stopped herself, out of fairness to him. But I don't want to misrepresent anything. I need somebody to try 75 cases that I'm hating on. Asbestos work referred to me by a New York firm, damages cases. Ugh. I know. Would you consider it? You know what? I'll do more than consider it. What's it pay? We can negotiate that when I come sign the papers. Ha! John chuckled. Watch out, I'm a great negotiator. No better than I am, dude. You just told me I'm the only buyer. Ouch! John burst into new laughter. I was bluffing. The hell you were, Judy told him, smiling. Get ready for me to lowball you. We'll see about that. When are you coming over? Right now. I'll be there in 15. See you. John chuckled again. Bring your calculator. Very funny. Bye now. Judy smiled as she hung up, popped up from her seat, grabbed her bag and coat from the chair, and hurried out of her office. She hustled down the hall to the reception area, toward what sounded like a happy commotion. She turned the corner to see Mary, Allegra, and Marshall clustered excitedly around Benny and Anne, who must have just gotten back from trial. She gathered that they had won because everybody was beaming, and trial exhibits and boxy trial bags had been abandoned around the reception room. Judy made a beeline for the happy group in high spirits herself. Congratulations, Benny and Anne, she called to them, and everybody looked over, flush with victory. Thanks, Carrier, Benny grinned. Meanwhile, way to go. You hit another one out of the park. There are so many reporters outside, and they're all asking about you. Next to her, Anne smiled her dazzling smile. Judy, what happened to you this weekend? When do I get to hear this story? Hold that thought. Judy crossed to the elevator. I have an errand to run that will take half an hour. Then we can go out to lunch and celebrate. On me. Mary grinned. I'm in. Anne nodded. Me too. Allegra hopped up and down. Me three, she said, because she was still young. Only Benny looked at Judy like she was crazy. Carrier, it's too early for lunch. Also, where are you going? Why aren't you setting up a press conference? What errand can be so important? Judy hit the button to call the elevator cab. Actually, I'm off to hire somebody to work the damages cases from Bendaflex. Oh. Benny lifted her eyebrows, intrigued. Don't you want to run the candidate by me? No, thanks. You told me I could hire anybody I wanted, and I did. Right. Benny blinked. So, who'd you hire? An experienced litigator I know just freed up, and I hopped on it. Great. What's her name? John Foxman? Everybody froze for a moment, falling silent. Ping, went the elevator, signaling the arrival of the cab. Carrier, did I hear you right? Benny asked in disbelief. We're an all-woman law firm, and you hired a man? Yep. Judy stepped into the elevator, pressed the down button, and hoped the doors closed fast. How's that going to work? Benny's eyes flew open, an incredulous blue.
I don't know,
Judy shrugged, just as the elevator doors began to slide closed. But we're going to find out, aren't we?
This is Maria Bello. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Betrayed by Lisa Scatolini. This program was produced and directed by Scott Sherritt, executive producer Laura Wilson, recorded by Scott Crisp, post-production by Danny Meltzer, text copyright 2014 by Smart Blonde LLC, production copyright 2014 by Macmillan Audio, all rights reserved.